This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
Any critical infrastructure, which is a natural monopoly, like our grid, has got to be of, by, and for the people. And it's got to be nonprofit. It doesn't work otherwise.
This week on Sea Change Radio, we speak with Maine State Representative Seth Berry about the shortcomings of his state's power grid and recent efforts to create a consumer-owned model that's less reliant on fossil fuels. We look at the monopolistic nature of public utilities in Maine and several other states, examine some possible solutions to the problem, and get a glimpse into the political power brokers deciding who will keep the lights on down east for decades to come. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by my friend Seth Berry. He is a state representative in Maine. He is a vice president of a biotech firm that deals in aquaculture called Kennebec River Biosciences. And he is also a board member of the Our Power Movement. Seth, welcome back to Sea Change Radio.
Yeah, Alex, great to be with you. Good to see you again.
Yes, so you continue to fight the good fight there in the great state of Maine. First, why don't you tell us a little bit about the Our Power Movement? It's a pretty cool idea, and people can go to ourpowermaine.org to check it out.
That's right. They sure can. And Our Power is an organization which we started a little over a year ago. It actually grew out of a previous organization that we had founded called Maine Power for Maine People. Our Power, and again, it is ourpowermaine.org, is working to make Maine the first state in the nation to get to 100% renewables and a just transition. So we want to make that transition fully. No fudging the numbers with, you know, creative accounting, and that's a problem in greenhouse gas accounting sometimes. And also, we want to do it in a way that's affordable so that all Mainers are able to participate in that transition. The way that we hope to get there is by creating a consumer-owned utility so that the future electrical grid, which is a monopoly we will all be depending on, no matter where you are in the country, in a decarbonized future, so that that grid is not for profit and is of, by, and for the people that it serves.
So give us a snapshot of the current electrical grid or grids in Maine and how the Our Power Movement hopes to inject itself into that matrix.
Yeah, great question. So the current electrical grid in Maine is the least reliable in the nation. That means we have the worst outages, specifically the most frequent outages in the nation and the second longest outages in the nation. And that's for several years running. We also have very high costs associated with that grid. So the average electricity customer here in Maine is paying the 10th highest rates overall in the entire nation. And then customer satisfaction, which is another good metric to look at, is the lowest in the nation, bar none. And you, coming from the PG&E service territory, will appreciate that PG&E is actually ranked better than our largest utility here, which is called Central Maine Power. CMP serves most Mainers. There's a second largest electrical utility called Versant, and then a number of small, very well-run consumer-owned utilities that serve the remainder of the state. They only serve about 5% of the load. They do serve many municipalities, but most of those are quite rural. So again, CMP and Versant together, the two large utilities, are giving us the 10th highest rates, the worst reliability, and the very worst customer satisfaction. Clearly, Maine is poised for change. I mean, people are fed up with the situation that they find themselves in. And as we look to decarbonize, we will be depending on this grid, this electrical grid, for literally everything, you know, all of our future energy needs. So it's a problem, and it's one that we hope to solve.
So in California, one of the main dissatisfactions that people are finding is that their operators' electrical wires have contributed to burning down half the state. So that hasn't been ideal. That's a good way to kind of lose Yelp stars for sure. But what is the mix for CMP and Versant's grid in terms of fossil fuels and clean energy mix? And what are some of the root causes, in your estimation, of the shortfalls of these two operators?
Yeah. Well, first, just as an aside on PG&E, you know, killing 100 people and pleading guilty to felonies and going bankrupt twice in the last, you know, 20 years.
That'll do it.
That'll lose you the Yelp stars for sure. And by the way, like, again, like, they rank higher in customer satisfaction than our utility here. So it is, that's an accomplishment, you know, for our utility to do worse than PG&E, I think. You asked about the mix here. The mix here is, first of all, it's not provided by these utilities. We have a separate and competitive supply market. In other words, we're a restructured state because of our very high rates. Like many other states with high rates, we did restructure. We've required the utilities to sell off their generation plants, and that, you know, it's been, it's not without controversy, but I think by and large, it's actually been a success. We do have in the supply, the typical mix is largely hydro, biomass, some wind, and a lot of natural gas. Maine is doing better in getting to renewables through some of that legacy, you know, stuff like hydro and biomass that I mentioned. You know, burning wood chips largely for the production of energy, which somewhat controversially is considered renewable here. I think, you know, that's probably a debatable point, but it is considered renewable and zero emissions here in Maine. The companies have really stood in the way, however, of more decentralized solutions and solutions that reduce the need to build out the grid. One of the unique problems with investor-owned utilities across this country is that we have a rigged regulatory system, which requires that they be given a double-digit guaranteed profit based on their investments in capital infrastructure. So if any utility in this country that's for profit invests $100,000 in, you know, towards a new substation or a renovated substation, or for that matter, you know, a bunch of new poles and wires to replace older ones, they're guaranteed a profit. So they're always looking to overbuild the grid. They're always looking to gold plate the grid. And the grid of the future is not overbuilt. It is in fact much more efficient than that. It involves a lot of two-way or multi-directional flow. Your hot water heater, your electric vehicle, your heat pump can be called upon as a resource in the grid of the future and can be turned off at times of peak demand, you know, remotely. There's a lot more IT involved in the grid of the future. There's a lot more efficiency, and there's also a lot of distributed renewables like rooftop solar in the grid of the future. So they're opposing, they're standing in the way of that transition, which we require to decarbonize rapidly and equitably. And I emphasize equitably because the affordability is critical if we're all going to get there. Right now, EVs and you know, rooftop solar are largely, you know, things that the wealthy have and others don't. So these folks are the traffic cop at the intersection between, you know, where we are now and where we hope to be. And they are a monopoly, and they're working within a rigged system. So that's what we propose to fix.
So if I had a CMP or Versant spokesperson on with us right now, what would they point to as some of the reasons for their shortcomings? I mean, Maine is a pretty rural state, but it's not the largest physical state in the union by any stretch of the imagination. I did hear at least that there wasn't a huge reliance on coal in their mix, but where would they be pointing the blame for their shortfalls?
They point the blame anywhere except at themselves. You know, they blame, they like to blame trees. Trees, you know, don't talk back, and they do say, you know, it's true that Maine has a lot of trees.
How does that hinder their operation?
They get knocked down and that causes outages, right? So trees get blown over, and that is true. However, the state with the best reliability in the nation, the shortest and least frequent outages, is Nebraska. Nebraska also happens to be the only state with
no trees.
Very few trees. But what Nebraska does have is a lot of tornadoes, and that wreaks havoc, as you might imagine, with electrical infrastructure. They still manage to have the best reliability in the nation, and they're very rural. When you're rural, you have a lot of lines of wire, poles and wires per customer. The grid is much more expensive per customer. And so that has cost implications as well as reliability implications. Again, Nebraska, is the most reliable state. They're obviously also one of the cheapest states in the nation. So, you know, we can learn from this. And there are other places around the country that likewise are doing more with less. They tend to be the places that are nonprofit and that are governed of, by, and for the people they serve.
Speaking of the government there, I mean, contrast Maine politics and how it relates to the state's electric grid versus, let's take a Nebraska while we're on that subject.
Sure. Yeah, the politics of Maine are fascinating. We had a little mini Trump before Trump was even elected. A guy named Paul LePage. See, he's famous, right?
Notorious.
You heard of him even out on the left coast. So Paul LePage. Yeah, LePage was he likes to say he was Trump before Trump was Trump. And you know, he was elected in 2010 in the big, you know, the red tide of the Tea Party 2010 election, the midterm elections. And Republicans, the Tea Party principally, took not only the governorship, but also the Maine House and the Maine Senate. So the whole trifecta flipped in that year here in Maine. And we entered a dark ages of sorts. We had a really tough time, especially in those first 2 years where they had the trifecta. We then took back the House and Senate, but LePage was reelected in 2014 and remained governor for eight long dark years. But we've done a lot of incredible things here because the voters are open to them. And I think of many things that were done through the ballot question. Like California, we have direct democracy. I don't think Nebraska has that. We can put something on the ballot directly. So we enacted the first and best clean election system in the country by ballot question. We enacted the first bottle bill with, you know, redemption back in the 70s to get the bottles, you know, beverage containers off the streets and the rural roads. We enacted ranked choice voting, first state in the nation to do that on a statewide basis back in 2016. We enacted a tax on the wealthy. We enacted minimum wage, you know, and to do that in spite of, you know, very conservative results like what we saw with Paul LePage is pretty interesting.
Third boxcar, midnight train, destination Bangor, Maine. Wool worn out suit and shoes. I don't pay no union dues. I smoke old stogies I have found. Short but not too big around. I'm a man of means by no means. King of the road. I know every engineer on every train.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/seachangeradio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to Maine State Representative Seth Berry. He is also on the board of Our Power, ourpowermaine.org, and a VP at Kennebec River Biosciences. So, Seth, what are some of the solutions that Our Power Maine is trying to set forth?
Our Power is laser focused on making Maine the first state in the nation to make a just transition to 100% local renewables for our power. And the way that we do that is by creating a Pine Tree Power Company, a nonprofit, independently operated, democratically governed utility, which will serve as a true partner in that transition. You know, as I mentioned, over my 13 years of experience in the legislature, primarily working on energy and telecom policies, we've seen these two large for-profit utilities again and again not only fail their customers, but also stand in the way of good policy. They have opposed net metering, you know, for rooftop solar, and actually succeeded in rolling that back under the LePage administration. They opposed efficiency. They've tried to ram through a very expensive, very destructive large transmission line to connect us to hydro resources to the north in Quebec, rather than encouraging, you know, local, more local Maine-based solutions. And again, they're all about this very centralized, overbuilt, gold-plated grid, which is really not the efficient and affordable grid that we need in the future. As a result, we have seen in this state an energy burden for our lower income consumers, which is off the charts. It is one of the highest in the nation. The average person at the federal poverty level, maybe a single mother trying to support a couple kids, she might be making $16,000 a year. She's spending on average $4,000 a year on her energy costs alone. As we switch to all clean energy, we need to make sure we don't leave people like her behind. Likewise, we have many factories, a lot of industry where the jobs are really dependent on low energy costs. So we believe that the shift to a consumer-owned utility will address that need by cutting costs. Our projections are that by creating the Pine Tree Power Company and buying out the existing consumer-owned utilities, we can save $9 billion over the first 30 years alone. In California, that might not be as much, but here in Maine, with only 1.3 million people, that's a lot of money. So we can reduce costs as we make the transition, also have local democratic governance, and a utility that's really responsive to the imperatives of the moment.
Give us a better idea of the solar profile of Maine. Obviously, it's one of the more northern states, but I can see its residents being able to benefit greatly from the freedom that residential solar can provide, especially when the grid operators are falling short in terms of customer service and reliability issues. If you can walk us through some of the rebates and what the penetration rates are currently and how Our Power hopes to stimulate residential solar market in Maine.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, most people are pretty familiar with the concept of net metering. It's really the original way of dealing with rooftop solar, where, you know, if the sun is shining and your dishwasher's not running, you know, lights are off, you might be running your meter backwards part of the time, right? So the idea of net metering is you can run your meter backwards, and then you bank those credits, and you can use them anytime during the year. You never get a check. You might pay a small monthly amount for the privilege of being connected to the grid, but you're not making money on it. You're just breaking even. That idea of net metering is something that investor-owned utilities, whether it's PG&E where you are or Central Maine Power where I am, have opposed and have fought against across the country. It's been a huge flashpoint in the battle over our clean energy future. And what's really going on is it's a proxy war for who will control the energy of the future. Who is in charge of that energy? You know, when we decarbonize, when we switch to electrical vehicles and electric heat pumps and literally electrify everything, the utilities want to own it all. They want to own everything, and they want to protect their profits. They've got hotels and monopolies on Boardwalk and Park Place, on Pennsylvania, all the way around the monopoly board of our grid right now, and they want to keep every one of those because when you and I land on a square, they want us to pay full boat. We've already gone forward here in Maine with a good deal of community solar, making that net metering available through virtual net metering to customers across the country. But we had to do that over and above the objections of our utility. And it was only because Democrats took a trifecta in the House, the Senate, and the governorship starting in 2018 that we were able to do that. The utilities be working hard to roll that back, and we need to protect it. We also need to move forward with more efficiency, more solutions like demand aggregation. And offshore wind is a huge opportunity here in Maine, as it is in Northern California as well.
Listening to you describe some of the politics of Maine and talking about the solar industry, it brings to mind a piece we did 5 years ago or so with Tim Dickinson, investigative reporter for Rolling Stone, who was talking about the Florida solar issues and how the state legislature there is really in bed with the public utilities and had put in these crazy laws prohibiting individuals from leasing solar panels. So like Florida, which has a really, I think, the second best solar profile in the country in terms of sun, was not even in the top 10 in terms of penetration rates for solar, largely because people had to just buy their panels. They couldn't lease them, leasing has been one of the real sparks for solar's popularity around the country. So if you can kind of take us behind the scenes and shed some light on the political infighting, corruption, and what is keeping the Maine grid from being more efficient, and how the political system has been a hindrance along the way.
Yeah, well, I love it that you brought up Florida, because it is a great example of where this incredible opportunity in solar, and the industry just owns the state house, and it's a classic problem. The investor-owned utility industry has done an excellent job of gaming the system around the country over the last 100 years. In fact, 120 years, arguably. In the early 1900s, they lobbied for and successfully created public utility commissions around the country. People think these public utility commissions are there to regulate the utilities. That's theoretically true, but what they really do is balance the needs of the investors for profit with the needs of the customers, and that's if they're doing their job well. More often than not, they're just responding. They're captured regulators, and they're responding to whatever the industry is looking for, and they justify this crazy for-profit monopoly system that we have. With respect to the captured regulator, and that's really, I think, the way you're getting at with your question. We do see that in Maine as well, and it's often a psychological capture. It's not even that people are on the take and they're like literally corrupt. It's just that they are they drink the Kool-Aid, because these very nice silver-tongued lobbyists and lawyers for the utilities are in the committee rooms of the legislature and in the Public Utility Commission hearings, very friendly, very well behaved, very polite. They ask about your kids, and they form relationships, and pretty soon you're going out to lunch together. And then they're also super smart, and so when they say that something is a good idea in energy policy, the legislators often respond, and it's typically that they take Republicans for granted, and the Republicans just do whatever they say, and then they get enough Democrats. They only need a handful. Even when there's a Democratic majority, they can usually get what they want by just getting, all the Republicans and a handful of Democrats to go along with them. So that's the kind of regulatory capture that we typically see. It sometimes is more blatant. You know, we've seen examples around the country of people being bought off, you know, the Speaker of the House in Illinois not long ago, for example, was, you know, found to be on the take and actually lost his job. You know, utilities will hire people to pretend to be, you know, grassroots activists, and they're literally actors. You know, we've seen that sort of thing happen. But more often than not, it's just good old-fashioned lawyering and lobbying and, you know, being present throughout the committee processes, where the average person just doesn't, I mean, they don't even speak the language, never mind have the time to go and, you know, spend the whole week in a committee room. It's a very esoteric topic too. That closes people off as well. So, you know, that's really the biggest issue, Alex, you know, and it's not as sexy as, you know, as like bribery and corruption, but I think that's the most pervasive reason that we do have, this problem here in Maine. There are also absolutely, you know, political campaigns, political contributions that are a factor here. Our legislature has a great clean election system, but a lot of folks still run traditionally and take, you know, donations from our utilities. The clean election system really hasn't worked for the governor's office, and people always run traditionally for that if they win. You know, our current governor, the previous governor, every governor that in Maine's history has asked for and received corporate donations, including from our utilities. So, you know, the interesting thing about Maine politics, and I think this is true across the country, is that the utilities have really always had a stranglehold on the democratic process. You know, literally our hospitals, you know, it's crazy to have this owned and controlled by a for-profit monopoly, which, by the way, is a foreign for-profit monopoly. It's not even, you know, US based in the case of Maine anymore. So, you know, what I like to ask people is, would you want to turn over the Army, Navy, Air Force, and Marines to a foreign for-profit monopoly, you know, and then quote unquote regulate it? You know, would that make sense to try to own and control our military? I don't think so. I don't think you would either. You know, what about our public schools? Would it make sense to turn over our public schools completely to a foreign for-profit monopoly and, you know, try to regulate that and make that work? Yeah, probably not. Our hospitals, our fire stations, you know, our roads and bridges, you know, that this is any critical infrastructure, which is a natural monopoly, like our grid, has got to be of, by, and for the people. And it's got to be nonprofit. It doesn't work otherwise. And we will not decarbonize. We will not successfully decarbonize if Maine and California and Nebraska and Florida don't have consumer ownership of utilities.
Well, folks can go to get involved. They can go to ourpowermaine.org. And thanks again for the terrific work you're doing for your constituents there in Maine. Seth Berry, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
My pleasure, Alex.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Raul D'Souza and Roger Miller.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.